Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji Nyssen. This show is supported by our show partner, Lacole. Stage 9 from Cluses to Tignes. This is the recap. And the last stage before the rest day, we'll have the rest day recap. Tomorrow, we'll take stock of our Velo Games teams. Mine is in absolute tatters once again. But this stage, 145Ks long, a shorter one, but the back end of this is the third day of hard racing. They have a long climb, Col de Sées, 10K, 6% descent, Col du Pré, Cornet de Roselon combo that we saw in the Dauphiné, 12.5Ks, 8% straight into 6Ks, 6%. Then a long descent valley in the flat valley. Then the longest climb of the race so far, the Monte de Tignes, 21Ks, 5.5%. It was where Primoz Roglic had been doing his recon rides for like a month, and where Jumbo would have been planning an attack, but not today because he didn't start the race. Mathieu van der Poel also did not start preparing for Tokyo. But yeah, the climb's very gradual with a flat finish. What did you make of MVDP abandoning Benji? He didn't even pretend he had knee pain. He just said, I'm going to the Olympics. Do you expect Merckx outraged comments?
Probably not because it's van der Poel, but in all honesty, van der Poel should do what he wants. I don't care. He should go for the goals. He plans for himself. He gave us wonderful things, and I'm thankful for that. If he wants to leave underwater stuff now, that's good, because I didn't expect him to do much from this point onwards anyway. We've got like 2-3 stages where he could do something. So yeah, I find it a good decision. I think that it's wise for the Olympics. And as a consequence, I also think that it's wise in the long run, because perhaps it's not ideal to try and go for 3 weeks the first time you go to the Tour de France. If you've got other plans just after, stuff like that. And yeah, all in all, I find it a good decision. Nothing more than that.
The break, Benji, we thought a break was going to win and it'd be a large group, mainly because UAE don't have to pace anything really. Pogacar just got such a huge gap that even someone on 10 minutes, I mean, why do they really care? And even if they get close, he can beat them later anyway. So how did the break initially form, and was it as long as yesterday or the other day where there was like they were fighting for an hour and a half?
It was a very long break fight, to be honest, and it started off quite simple. We started seeing two riders go over the front. I think it was Ballerini and Sweeney, and they had a gap for quite a while because the peloton wasn't planning to directly start attacking. You see on the profile of the stage that you got a flat section before the Côte de Montcy, and people want to wait until the climb starts to send their climbers in the breakaway. And to make sure that happens, we saw Israel Startup Nation move to the front of the peloton, set Greipel at the front, their GC leader, and they had him pace until the bottom of the Côte de Montcy with Sweeney and Ballerini like 27 seconds ahead or something, just for the attempt of trying to make sure that it all stays together for a bit until the climb starts, and then they can start attacking with Dan Martin and Michael Woods. They tried with both, and eventually Woods was the one that hit the front most of the time. Dan Martin was in there for a bit, but you know the next ascendee is not going to be there, so I guess he was gone pretty soon. But the rest of the break formed very gradually, people attacking left and right, and also the fight for a green cost ad, because we've got that intermediate sprint after the Côte de Montcy, which means that climby sprinty boys, as we call them, decide to try and go in breakaways. And we saw Matthews and like three teammates of a bike exchange setting a pace at the front of the group and trying to get away in a second group that way. And Colbrelli was there as well with teammates. He had to do most of it alone though, because Dylan Teuns was there, but he wasn't there all the time. Dylan Teuns was not on the level of yesterday, but I can imagine that he's probably had a pretty rough day yesterday trying to get that victory. But all in all, that battle came together, and for a good half an hour, break fights were going on. Matthews trying to attack, Colbrelli trying to attack, and their teams trying to work together to try and attack against each other, basically. And going towards the intermediate sprint, then we have those two teams at the front of the race, in the front of the breakaways, because still a lot of teams at the front before the peloton or a lead group. I think a good minute and a half at that point. And we saw that Colbrelli and Matthews were prepping for it. Matthews had his three-man train going towards the intermediate sprint, Colbrelli in the wheel of Matthews. And then something shady started happening. Matthews goes past his lead out, and he's on the left side of the road. He deviates from that point to the entire other side of the road, basically almost pushing Colbrelli in the barriers, just stops a meter in front of it to try and stay safe of the rule, you know, so that you're not actually throwing,
like
throwing
him in the Swiss. Banner.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly the same thing as Koster and Swiss. And that's a clear deviation and should be relegated. But the problem is they've got a gap of on the next group. There's a 3-second gap after those two riders to the next group. So he's going to get relegated in the group, and he's going to get second after, well, losing the sprint after deviating because Colbrelli came past. So if he gets punished there, he's going from second to second, which is just, yeah, that's how the rule works, unfortunately. So no punishment for that, and no punishment possible because the rule is not applicable. But next to the sprint deviation, brakes started forming fully then, and we had riders like Higuita show up at the front, Quintana show up at the front, and we also had Woods that was attacking a lot. But most importantly,
can I do the full
legend
40?
Of the day, Wout Poels.
Wout Poels does his own breakaway. He doesn't want to be in a 40-man breakaway. Wout Poels wants to ride the Tour de France solo and just sit 20 seconds in front of whatever breakaway group there is. But it is a huge break, but no GC threats. For the stage with this mountaintop finish, we had, I mean, Koster was there, he dropped back later. But the stage, we had Barguil, Kuss, Van Baal, Paulus, Dan Martin, Pierre Rolland, Patrick Conrad, Geschke, Frehle, Higuita, Guerrero, Lucas Hamilton, Pacher, Latour, Elizonde, Moritz, Woods, Bonamour, Quintana, Alaphilippe, Fuglsang, Esteban Chavez, Cataneo, Turns, Mollema, Poels, O'Connor, Guillaume Martin. The closest on GC, Martin at 7:28, O'Connor at 8:13. Remember that? O'Connor at 8:13 on Tadej Pogačar. But given where GC is at right now, that 8:13 is actually, pretending Pogačar doesn't exist, about 3 minutes on the bundle of GC podium contenders behind. So once O'Connor snuck into that break, Benji, and he said it wasn't the plan, he just found himself in there like Simon Yates on stage seven. What can, if I'm going to pretend you're the director of Education First or Movistar, Benji, UAE don't care about O'Connor. They gave him 8 minutes, don't care. Would you have, when it got to 5-6 minutes, sent a rider up to pace a little bit harder than UAE, or is there just nothing you can do?
I don't think I would. Like, it depends, because Ben O'Connor is still dangerous. He's a rider that has done very well at Romandy, for example. He's dangerous in GC. If you have him 5 minutes ahead of Pogačar, then good luck trying to podium or top five this Tour de France if you're like a Vingegaard or a Nuron or something, because Ben O'Connor will likely survive and keep, well, relatively a gap on the others, because he's going to lose time on Iran and so forth, I think, on mountains. Perhaps not, because O'Connor's a good climber. So, I don't know. I think that people might underestimate him, but I'm not sure if I would kick in and say, I'll put a rider up front and at least base a bit against O'Connor. I think that might be a bit too much.
Yeah, I think it depends on the team. Everyone's really tired. I think it's just one of those things where O'Connor's smart enough to get in that break, and Guillaume Martin is as well. But, you know, maybe, I guess, Lopez rides like that, they're just too far on GC. Before we get into the break, beginning to attack each other, I'll mention our show partner, Lacol. They produce performance cycling apparel produced at the base of Monte Grappa in Italy. If you want to get some Lacol kit, you can pick it up using our code LRTDF20, which can get you 20% off all items, even if they're already discounted. But the break, Benji, what, like, again, you mentioned Wout Poels. Why are riders attacking with 90Ks to go? They're not attacking the group of 40. They're attacking when they formed a group of five. We had a group of like Quintana, Poels, Higuita, Woods, O'Connor, Hamilton. And Quintana just refused to work with the group with 90Ks to go in the rain on like Col du Pre. What's the rationale for them attacking so early?
Well, I think that Wout Poels' goal is different from people that are in the other breakaway part like Higuita and Sofov or aiming for the stage win, while Pools is not, so he needs to attack early. The problem with Pools is that he attacks way too early. Like, he started attacking 30k in front of a K1 point to try and get that K1 point. That's not going to help too much. It gets you an advantage on people, but the people behind you will also, if they're having the goal of K1, also go for it. We saw that at one of the early K1 points where Wout Poels was going for it, and he was trying to get those points, and Quintana attacked from behind trying to get those points instead. He attacked away. Woods was also mingling about in those sprints, and Quintana had the sprint of his life against Poels to try and get the K1 points there, and just about lost it on the line. I think he's still preparing for the intermediate sprints. But Wout Poels takes points there, but the problem is that he spends so much energy at the front, 25 seconds ahead of everybody, that the climb afterwards, he just blows up. And then you've got a situation where Quintana's lonely at the front for a bit, and we see Higuita flying from the back straight to the front. O'Connor is making moves in the back as well, and slowly but surely catching people. Woods is in a descent, so he's losing plenty of time. I think in one descent, he lost 4 minutes, not even joking. And we've got an interesting K1 battle today, I have to be honest. In the end, Nairo Quintana took most of the K1 points and is now the new polka dot leader. We have Michael Woods sitting in second on 42 points, and Pulse's early actions of going too early is what leads him to 39 points only. And O'Connor is actually out there as well, 24 points behind. So it's a fierce battle there, and I look forward to seeing where this goes, because in previous years we had Pogacar already fighting for it as well, accidentally, because he got too many points on the climbs, because Jumbo pulled him to the line every time to sprint for K1 points. And as a consequence, he was closer, but this year he's on 10 points, so 40 points behind already. But the problem is, I think you told me this, that most of the K1 points are in the final week, right?
Well, on Mont Ventoux, the second ascent, there's 40 points available, and Quintana's got 50 total in 9 stages. So the stages, like stage 11, got a lot of points, and then stages 14 to 17, or 18 rather, 14 to 18, there's just like 160 points available. So maybe if you want to wear the jersey for a day or two, for sure going hard today is, you know, and sacrificing the stage win like Poels, maybe that makes sense. But if you want to, I would have gone for the stage personally. You'll pick up enough points. The battle for the polka dots will be won in, if you actually want to wear it in Paris, it'll be won in stages 14 to 18. So I feel like, yeah, you wouldn't have lost the polka dot battle if you rode a bit more conservatively today, if you're Woods or Poels. And we saw yesterday, Woods rode really aggressive early, attacking early, got caught by turns, dropped. We saw a similar thing happening today. Ben O'Connor seemed to ride within his limits, and he's like 6'2", 188 centimetres, bigger guy, West Australian. And then you got Higuita and Quintana. We don't need to tell you how small they are. They were attacking him on virtually every descent. He looked like, maybe it was the crest of Rosalon, Benji, he had the brown gloves. Someone in my Discord made a Bernie Sanders meme. O'Connor was furious with this big brown glove he couldn't get on his left hand in the Asia Tour's beautiful brown kit. And he was having trouble in the descents. They dropped him multiple times. He'd come back on a flatter section with more sort of flat power. They drop him again, and it's very technical off the end of Rosalon. And I think the only threat to that group, they drop Woods. I think Woods was losing so much on the descents.
Yeah,
you calculate it. Like, how much are we talking when he's actually losing on these descents?
Like, he started off he was at the top a bit behind the front riders, I think 30 seconds, and by the bottom he was in a group 4 minutes 30 behind. So that's a lot. I think that you have to add to that that most likely if you're on 2 minutes, you're going to take it easy anyway, or easier or safer, because at that point you're like, I'm not getting back anyway, so I might as well just save energy for the coming days. So I think that's a bit bloated by that effect, but crazy descending at the front. Higuita riding 80k an hour in wet descents.
It's crazy.
I was scared. The bouncing cheetah Higuita was in a descent. That's his new nickname, okay? Little monster. No. The bouncing cheetah Higuita it is. And he went crazy and he dropped Quintana, who's actually a pretty good descender, because they were dropping O'Connor behind. And O'Connor was on 30 seconds at the bottom of the, it was a long descent. And he had to crawl back in the plateau section towards both Higuita and Quintana, for example. So those two riders are what's left at the front of the race. Those are the ones that are going to be fighting it out, because the next group is roughly on 4 minutes with the climby sprinty boy, Colbrelli, or shall we call him the sprinty climby boy at this point?
No, he's just a pure climber right now. He's dropping, dropped Alaphilippe, Fuglsang, Chavez. Just
well, Alaphilippe in the rain is a bit of
Yeah, true. Turns, he's tired from yesterday. But yeah, that the next threat really was that group, which had poor, sorry for the domestique, I didn't pick up his name, but Guillaume Martin had a cough at his teammate pulling for so long today in vain, and they just never got any purchase on that Woods, Quintana, Higuita, O'Connor group. Hamilton dropped out of that group. So yeah, they go into Roslin. We've got the 255-kilo Colombians, Quintana and Higuita, who've just made O'Connor do a 30, you know, solo to get back to them after the descent. We've got a 21K, 5.5% climb. This should be, you're thinking, game, set, and match for the Colombians. The problem is, and this is what doesn't make sense, Benji, Higuita had been pulling a lot for Ben O'Connor and on both Col du Pré and Roselant, and he continued to do so on Tignes, which I feel like he had a tactical reason to sit on the whole time. Yeah. He's got Rigoberto Urán behind. There's Ben O'Connor about at the base of Tignes goes into virtual maillot jaune, and Urán's podium is now being threatened by O'Connor. We'll talk about him more in a second if you haven't heard about him too much. And I'm like, Higuita, why don't you just sit on and say, hey, I've got my teammate behind, you pull, and you're pulling really strong. Were you, like, surely the team radio, I know Higuita in the moment might not think it through, but surely the team should have told him that on the radio, Benji.
Yep, I think so as well. And next to that, it's also a tactical thing. If you're Quintana and Higuita and you see that O'Connor catches up in the plateau section before Tignes, from that point onwards, I say to O'Connor, well, if you want to have your yellow jersey, bloody right for it. I'm not taking over. I'm sitting in your wheel until the climb starts, and I'll keep myself there until I can try and ride away at some point. There's no way I'm helping you right here. And he could have done so already, like you said, on the earlier climbs, but I think that he's also thinking about the stage, and I think the majority of stuff that Higuita did was still in the descent, but he should have been more tactical towards the end. And it became even worse the second that we hit the bottom of Tignes, and we saw, first of all, the first 2 kilometers of the climb. It's 21 kilometers of climbing. Quintana drops, just park edgel on the right side of the road. Off completely the wheel. Done.
Yep.
And then I'm like, Higuita's winning this. Oh, easy. Okay. Higuita's winning this. I said Higuita would win on Tignes at some point in the last week. And I was fully believing that it would happen. Like, genuinely, O'Connor not winning this. No, not at all.
Well, that's why he didn't need to pull Benji. Because if they go if they go to the flat finish together, Higuita smokes O'Connor.
Yeah.
And exactly. they got 8 minutes on the Peloton and 5 minutes on Cataneo.
What's happening there, by the way?
Oh, in the Peloton? UAE. Well, yeah, we haven't mentioned them for a reason. UAE basically have 6 riders pacing backwards.
Except McNulty, well.
Yeah, McNulty crashed on a descent. It was wet, technical descent off Roseland, and he looked over his shoulder. His front wheel veered. He looked over his right shoulder, front wheel veered left. It's a bit of a tongue twister. And he went into a ditch. Now, I haven't seen. I hope he's okay. It looked like a soft landing. But
it was pretty deep, so I'm glad he was okay.
Just mark it down. That is just when people are like, oh, Pagacha never crashes, luck, etc. Oh, you know, it's not just luck. There has been a lot of luck influencing this first week, things like that. You know, for example, Gaudu crashed in a similar scenario in Dauphiné or Paris-Nice in front of Gagan Hart, brought him down. McNulty didn't bring Pagacha down, but he made a mistake and crashed. So just there is luck at play as well in this, but Pagacha's on the right side of it so far. But yeah, UAE don't care about O'Connor. We're like, are they letting him have the yellow jersey? But he went into the base with 8 minutes, so they're always going to do Tignes quicker than him, one would think. I think Bjerg was pacing too fast, and then Micah was like, let's slow this right down, and they gave a minute back to O'Connor. But anyway, the battle between O'Connor and Higuita was short-lived because O'Connor just straight up rode away from him. We didn't see if he attacked or not. I don't even think he did. It seems like O'Connor was just able to ride a steady pace on all these climbs today, and in the cold and wet conditions, just like in Romandy, I said Tion 2000, where he was very, very strong chasing Woods and Thomas. He came second on that stage, would have probably come third if Thomas hadn't crashed. Same thing today, similar climb if not as steep. And he like hard dropped Higuita and Quintana, Benji. It seems like they like forgot to eat or something because they lost a minute, 2, 3, 4. Higuita then gets passed by Quintana, who dropped earlier.
He kept eating, so it's weird. I think they just spent too much energy in the first 2 climbs. They were very offensive, and O'Connor came from the back.
Yeah,
and that seems to be the better strategy here.
And that's all that needs to be said, really. Like, we don't need to describe half an hour of Ben O'Connor riding solo, but the big Australian takes a huge stage win, now winning a winner of a Giro and a Tour de France stage in less than a year. A guy who was out of contract at the end of last year on NTT, Azure Desert Citroën gave him a one-year deal. He then started riding really consistent in the one-week GC races, one-week stage races this year. They gave him a three-year extension. They're going to be laughing now. They might have felt like they lost some money when they only gave him the 1 year and then they had to re-up him for three, but they've now saved some money giving him that three-year deal. And they didn't even – they barely wrote an article about it. There was no fuss about it, and he's almost their best rider on the roster. I wrote a 3,000-word article a few days before the tour about Ben O'Connor for like the highest tier members of my on the YouTube channel. And I said, O'Connor can win a stage at this year's Tour de France. I'll just worry that he's going to go for GC. Polkadot's in a stage. He can definitely win to the level he's shown. And he lost time on GC, went for the stage, is up there on Polkadot's, and now he's up there on GC, Benji.
Exactly what he needed to do.
What did you see in the GC group afterwards with Ineos then taking over and pacing? Do you think the attitude has taken over that no one cares about Pogacar anymore of the GC podium guys?
I think so. I think that the entire group of individuals is basically thinking about their GC right now. I think that Ineos still had a bit of hope. You never know if something bad happens or something that, well, not to Pogacar, but if he has a very bad day suddenly today or something and they pace and he accidentally drops while they didn't think it, then they're going to be happy with it. But their pacing was mainly to put some pressure on other podium candidates, I'm pretty sure, because then they kept on doing that. And Geraint Thomas, very good ride today. Genuinely one of the better riders on Ineos today. Very good ride. Sets a lot of pace on this climb. And they were prepping something. Carapaz would attack at some point. You would know it from that point onwards. Pogacar was basically isolated when Carapaz was down to his last rider. But Thomas pushed so hard that there were 8 or 9 riders left. Lutsenko was still there. Uran was still there. Vingegaard was still there. I think that I'm missing a few names, but there were other people still there. I don't know who I forgot. Mas was there.
Kelderman
was there. And I think that's a group. And we see all of a sudden the attack from Carapaz. Well, we didn't see the attack like that. We saw at a certain point that he was 5 meters ahead of the group together with Pogacar in his wheel. And what happened next?
Well, he basically just didn't have the legs, and it's not surprising. He's not looked on a – like, listen, Pogacar's been on an insane level, that's for certain. But Carapaz hasn't been able to put time into Wilco I did actually at the end today. He hasn't been able to put time into Uran and Enric Mas in 3 days of attacks. So that, I think, is not the level you would expect of Carapaz, particularly when Ineos had kind of set it up. I do feel like he's been going very early, and then he gets brought back, and then he's kind of isolated, and he fights out amongst himself. Vingegaard we saw dropping off the back. Unfortunately, the camera work was a bit annoying. They preferred to have a motorbike focusing on Cataneo coming 5 minutes after O'Connor than showing the podium GC battle. But when Carapaz got brought back, Pogacar was kind of left dangling off the front. He kept riding his tempo. He looks back, he sees he's got a 10-meter gap, and then Pogacar just rides away, and all the other GC podium guys don't even react. It's rational. What they're doing makes complete sense. If you're going to win the tour, if you're not to beat Tadej Pogacar, it's only if he crashes, right? And if he crashes out, it doesn't matter if he's 8 minutes ahead of you, 20 or 30 minutes ahead of you. If you're second, you're going to win the tour. So you may as well focus on the guys around you. I know that's defeatist. It's the end of week one, but come on, like, they're 5 minutes behind him. It's time to get something out of the tour. And yeah, he just rode away from them. And it was crazy. Luckily for Ben O'Connor, he had enough of a time gap today.
He wasn't going to take back 7 minutes today, mate.
Eventually,
last 3 kilometers.
Yes, anything's possible, mate. Anyway, we didn't see anything. We saw Vingegaard dropping, and then we didn't see anything until the static cam at the finish line. And we see the groups pretty much together. So maybe they attacked each other. I think Mas had attacked, and then the other South Americans had joined him. But yeah, they all came together over the line, except Kelderman lost a bit of time. Here's the stage results. Ben O'Connor winning 5 minutes and 7 seconds ahead of Mattia Cataneo, 5:34 ahead of Colbrelli. Colbrelli beat Guillaume Martin out of the break on this climb, which is crazy. Bonnemore fifth, Pogacar sixth on 6:02. So Pogacar finished and took another 32 seconds on Carapaz, Vingegaard, Mas, and Uran with virtually no effort. And then Quintana, Guerrero, Kelderman lost. So he lost 13 seconds, actually, on Carapaz, Vingegaard, and Mas. Godu lost a lot. Godu lost nearly a minute, and Lutsenko lost a full minute. So today has actually been the biggest, well, it's almost the biggest GC shakeup of this first week, with Ben O'Connor, Pogacar still first, Ben O'Connor leapfrogs 12 spots into second, 2 minutes and a second behind Pogacar, 3 minutes 17 ahead of Uran, and 3 minutes 31 ahead of Vingegaard. They all move up. Mas moves up. Lutsenko moves from third to eighth, now on 6:12. He's behind all of Kelderman, Mas, Carapaz, Vingegaard, Uran, O'Connor, and Godu loses places as well. So I think who are you now looking at as, without taking away from the rest day recap tomorrow, Benji, I think I'll ask the proper question. Is Ben O'Connor an actual GC podium threat now with a 3:20 advantage plus on all the other podium contenders?
No. Top five, yes. Top three, no. I think his time trial is not good enough. I think he's going to lose time in the time trial. I think he's going to lose some time in the climbing. And I expect Carapaz and Uran still to be the stronger ones and podium. I think that Vingegaard was on the edge for me of the podium before the stage, but today he cracked a bit in the final 2 kilometers. And if that happens here, then it's probably going to be worse in the third week. So most likely, I think that the experience of Uran will move him into the podium and Carapaz as well. And Enric Mas usually becomes better throughout the Grand Tour. So if he might be the best climber of the rest in the third week, that is very much possible. I think that Kelderman is also looking good. His time trial is also good.
Nah, but he looks terrible.
It was a bit worse than expected. He's not terrible.
He looks terrible.
But Senko was the one to drop today. Like, Kelderman, how much did he lose today? He lost
14 seconds.
Mate, that's not terrible. His TT was not horrendous. Good enough, but
14, mate, they were going backwards up Tinya. It's 5%.
Sorry, but if you're in the top 10 of GC right now in this Tour de France, I won't call you terrible.
No, I said he's not going. Well, what is he at? Seventh. I don't know.
I think he can top seven.
Oh, well, we're talking about podium.
I don't see Kelderman as a podium
course,
anymore.
Kelderman can come top five with a better TT. I'm just saying, I don't see podium. Lutsenko looks, yeah, he's on the precipice of, does he now think about stages later? The big turn-up, Benji, was Thomas. After Gruppetto yesterday, being able to pull at the end of Tinya, do you think he lost time deliberately yesterday? No?
I think that the initial part of the stage being so explosive as yesterday, the likes of riders of Van Avermaet saying they rode one of their best 10 minutes in their life, Thomas again saying his 20th best 10 minutes of his whole career, That's insane that they have to do that at the start of a stage. And if you hit the wall right there, then you're going to be in the peloton behind and there's no way you can bridge that after that section. So I think yesterday was a situation where certain riders would be dropped behind and caught behind because they hit the wall earlier than expected and couldn't like keep it at a decent tempo and couldn't keep it at their usual watts. Like Thomas is he's a time trialist. Well, a mountain time trialist when it comes to the type. So he is probably better off if the tempo is steady. And if it's so surgy at the start of the tour, or the start of a stage, I think that could be troublesome. And I think a lot of riders had that yesterday, that will have had a very bad day throughout and might still kick back in the next 2 weeks. Great revival today.
It reminded me so much of that Tion 2000 stage, Benji, because of, you know, it's suited Thomas and O'Connor there. It suited them again today. Some news on the Gruppetto. Riders have finished outside the time limit. Demar, Guarnieri, De La Place, Stefan de Bod, I think crashed yesterday. Dlamini on Quebecer, Vegan, and Brian Coquard. So not good for French sprint hopes. I actually thought Demar was looking a bit better in the last sprint stage, finished really fast, just out of position, and Guarnieri had crashed. So not good for Demar. Whether they reinstate them, I don't really see a particularly compelling reason to do so. Cavendish made the time cut, Froome made the time cut, Miguel Angel Lopez is struggling.
It's harsh to be OTL after fighting for an entire stage by 5 to 7 minutes at the end of a mountain stage like this, but that's a sport. You need to be able to climb enough to finish the stage on time. And it was a crazy first week, but the counter is also about survival. Cavendish made it as well. He was able to make it. DeMar didn't make it. And once again, just like the last time he had that, he takes half of team with him.
True. Yeah. So, yeah, Guarnieri gone. It's a shame. Cavendish was celebrating over the line. He had De Klerk and Mirfku helping him. I think these last three stages are probably the hardest, Benji, for Cavendish. I mean, we reviewed it, right, I think the other week, looking at the profiles. These were the hardest ones with early climbs. A lot of like Vontu, yes, two big climbs, but there's nothing beforehand. And I don't see the sort of – we're not going to see stage seven again, I don't think, where there's an all-out assault on the flat for 2 hours at 55 k's an hour. And Cav got in that move anyway. But yeah, Ben O'Connor, Benji, I guess everyone should go look him up on PCS. You can see this sort of build, and he's just another reminder that there are riders out there, if you look closely at results in sort of at the Giro last year, that if teams are smart, you can pick up these sort of riders. Same with Mattia Cataneo. He is very, very good, and I don't think he's on too much money either. But tomorrow's the rest day recap, Benji. We'll preview stage 10. Then we're going to preview the first week. We won't do it stage by stage. We'll preview all
the talk. Preview the first week, not preview.
Yeah. Some teams might want to have a rerun of it, Benji. And we'll talk about the winners and losers of week one. We'll maybe roast some Velo Game squads with 2020 hindsight, which is always
probably your own at this point.
Yeah, mine is dog shit, mate. It's so bad. I think I got Roglic and I got every single rider that crashed. I got Haig. No, it's bad. And yeah, we might see if we can get an interview on. We might not, but I've been actively refreshing Ben O'Connor Strava, and he hasn't put the file up yet. So, sorry, Ben, you should get rid of the press conference and upload that so I can look at your Strava power. But anything else, Benji, from this stage that was interesting? Is Quintana, you know, are there other things that like, disappointed you or any storylines that stick out?
I think we can say that Van Aert is definitely not trying to defend his GC because he actively decided on the second climb to drop with his teammates and with Tony Martin and so forth. So that wasn't going to continue happening. And then the question lies, will he be in full support of Vingegaard or will he go for a stage here or there? I dare to say that he should go for the first on the stages that are mountainous and try and go for the sprints here or there so they can at least try and get something extra out of this Grand Tour. I don't know about the team of Jumbo in total, but we'll talk about that tomorrow, how they should continue onwards. But that's, I think, the last extra thing I wanted to mention. And that's about it, I guess.
If you're watching on YouTube,
good stage.
Make sure you give us a like or subscribe to the YouTube channel or give us a review or a rating on podcast players. We'll see you at the rest day recap. Send us some questions at Lantern Rouge CP or hashtag LRCP on Twitter. We might get to them, and we'll see you then. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.